Bang.
Hello.
Here we are, Patreon episode.
Oh.
he hung out with us on episode 100. Now, we said the Patreons are going to be a little behind until we got caught up showing all the other ones off. But Chio hung out with us during the episode 100, and now he's making his debut on Patreon. This does not constitute or count as Chio's episode. We are going to do a full episode with him where we learn his entire wrestling history.
There we go.
But he's going to hang out with us tonight and talk wrestling now, a little behind the scenes of Dark Side of the Ring. You didn't get a chance to see it, but I'm sure when we start talking the story of what the topic is, I'm sure you'll probably know a little bit about what we're talking about.
Most likely. I think I'm old enough.
Yeah. So the first one is going to be the Nick Gage one. We're going to talk a little bit of Nick Gage.
Because we've already talked about the Brian Pillman.
Yeah, we already talked Brian Pillman. So we're going to talk Nick Gage. Then we're going to talk the
Collision in Korea.
The Collision in Korea. And then we're going to talk the Ultimate Warrior.
Wearing the shirt.
Okay.
The Warrior.
Yes. So.
All right.
And you're like, why would you do a podcast based on this TV show? Because we fucking love the show.
Hey, there is for last season they had a show that came on Vice where they talked about kind of like The Talking Dead.
Yeah,
it's like After Dark Side of the Ring or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's done very, very well. It's definitely inspired us to get away from reviewing weekly TV and just saying, let's find these old topics and talk about them. And they don't always have to be dark.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, but I think Dark Side of the Ring does an amazing job at it. They do a really good job of shedding light on stories.
Very good.
Yeah, very excellent. And now A&E's jumping on it, and they're doing documentaries.
I heard their Macho Man one was a hit piece, and I didn't watch it. I heard Don't Watch It just because they tried to
buried
Macho Man in it. Yeah.
Would lock in Elizabeth in the dressing room and stuff?
That, and that he was a drug addict and all this. It just wasn't good.
You go on the road that many days a year.
I have to say about that Macho Man, like he's not here to defend himself. So like Andy said, it could be a hit piece. Some stuff could be, you know, true. We don't know. We wasn't there, but like I said, he's not here to counter anybody else's comment.
Yeah. Well, before we get into all that, Chio, why don't you show us, tell us some of your plugs here. You said you got your podcast going. Where can people check out your stuff?
Once a month currently on CB Pro Live. Am I lagging again?
A little bit, but you're good. Go ahead.
It was real quick, okay. And then it stopped.
Once a month on Saturday. Okay, try one more time. Take three.
Yeah.
You can tune in at CB Pro Live on Facebook. We are produced by Crackbell Productions, but we started out through Devereaux Sports Podcast, which they cover like all Philly sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
And
sorry to hear that.
And the guy. And the guy behind running it, his name is Pat, but he used to wrestle under the name Frankie Frizzo. So a lot of times on the shows, we do actually have other wrestlers from who we frequent with, which some of the guys Andy might know anyway. Dennis Reaper, Gemini from, I don't want to say the Himalayan players, what is their tag team name? The Wrecking Crew, I think.
Was it?
They wrestled for Pinky at WPW.
Yeah.
It was Gemini and, I can't remember. But yeah, we have a bunch of different other guys that jump on. Some guys I never met before, and I'm just meeting for the first time through Pat himself. Our show is actually called Breakfast and Body Slams. He wanted me to get on here, and somehow I just picked the name for it. And we started in February. This is coming up. June 12th is going to be our fifth show there. But it's going pretty good there. And I wanted to branch out and do more. So I figured, you know, why not? I'm going to do the home cast. So if anybody wants to follow us and try to catch one of our shows or catch one of our old shows, you can check out Breakfast and Body Slams on Facebook. And it's simple as that.
Anytime you guys go live, feel free to share it in the Tornado Tag community page. We always welcome other content creators to share their stuff on there.
I believe on my last test on post. I think I did it earlier today. I actually name dropped you. Oh, well.
Appreciate that, man. We're trying hitting that. We just hit our third year mark, so we're grinding. We're doing some stuff.
Congratulations.
We just liked the page, so you have 180 likes now.
Nah, we got you. Breakfast and Body Slams. I'm gonna follow it real quick as well. Yeah, so like I said, we're going to definitely have you back on to talk more of your background story and everything like that. But I always try to keep interviews and everything when the full team is here. I don't want someone to miss out on something. But we'll definitely have you back to do that. We put you over on the episode. Actually, I'm already following it. I always say that you're not only just you are a worker, but you're someone who still loves the business, and you go out of your way to make sure people's hard work gets noticed, seen on many different levels, whether it be submitting your results of shows, whether it be promoting shows that you're not even a part of. Now your daughter's in the business where she's taking photography of these people so they can go out and showcase their abilities that way. I really respect that, and it meeting people like you and seeing you do what you do at shows, even behind the scenes, like when I was at Outbreak before I was even a podcast, I would just go to the shows, and I seen your level of dedication to the game made me really step up and follow in those footsteps to keep myself level-headed to say, you're doing a podcast, but your entire intention of what you're doing is to put over the people who are putting the entertainment on. So I want to say, like, you've been a trailblazer for even me stepping into this world, because you always put everyone else above yourself, and I really, really like that.
I really appreciate that. It wasn't my intention when I started out in the business, but I kind of grew to the fact of where some stuff that I was not taught myself, I feel like I need to give back to the one of the things that I learned along the way that wasn't taught to me. I try to teach some of the younger guys coming in, and I tell them, you can tell me, hey, old man, you don't know what you're talking about. Go take a seat. This is our time, blah, blah, blah. And I tell them that. I said, you can tell me that all you want. I'm just trying to feed you some information that might help you. You can take it or leave it. It is what it is. It's your call. Yeah. And I don't try to force feed anything or preach anything I do to anybody. Everything I say is just a suggestion. That's it. I'm like, so it they're grown men. They got into this business because that was their decision, and it's their decision if they want to take my advice or not. So like I said, I'm not going to harp on them. I'm not going to yell at them. Whatever. Like I said, they're big boys. This ain't ballet. You will get tough love from me. Even Matt Turner knows. Like when he asked me how his match, and I tell him, hey, if something sucks, I tell him it sucks, dude. You need to step up. You've been doing this for how long? And he really appreciates every time I call him out on stuff, even when I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always respected that. You don't.
That's good. Cause you tell someone's good and then they're gonna keep doing it the wrong way or the shitty way. So
my thing is I'm still at that point where, for me anyway, I've never trained. I've never stepped in and have done that, but I am a fan and I know what I like to watch and what I don't like to watch, but I'm still not smart enough to know more behind the scenes of what could have happened to make it not good, okay, or if you were trying to do something else. So for me, like when people,
like if somebody did a bias thing, you wouldn't know if it was necessarily wrong.
Exactly. So what, and I would never be someone who hasn't stepped in your shoes to tell you're not good at something. Yeah. I have a hard time personally with that. So when people come up to me and they want to know my opinion, I don't say I lie to them, but I tell people like, no, I legit enjoyed that match, but I'm also not going into it to be overcritical to like, that's just not my style of fandom. Like that,
I mean, usually when you're in the business, someone says, hey, how was it? They want to know, like you can do these where, oh, it was good. Or the classic. Well, I didn't see it, but I heard it sounded good.
Yeah.
But, you know, they kind of want to want to know, like, oh, was the suplex bad?
That, yeah. Instead of telling them if it was good or bad, I tell them what in the match I enjoyed.
Well, you liked, yeah. Yes. But they say, like, hey, how'd that dive look? And if it sucked, you got to say, hey, it sucked.
Yeah.
Because it hurt their feelings, maybe, but then next time they'll do it right. And it will look good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in that weird crossover because I'm still kind of learning how things work behind the curtain. I was always just a wrestling fan. Like, I didn't get behind the curtain really until Outbreak and PPW.
And when you're behind, like, when you don't know, then everything's cool. Like, yeah. You don't know what's bad. Like, you'd be like, oh, I didn't like that.
But like,
but you're just thinking like because you didn't like it.
Even like the wrestling, the handshake thing and all that. Nobody ever like gave me that pep talk.
Yeah.
They're just like, hey, you have this equipment. You've been doing this podcast. We like it. Come backstage and, you know, do this. And I'm like, all right, I'm here.
Yeah.
And then people are like, what the fuck this guy did? And I'm like, I'm still learning. I'm so sorry. I actually watched for the first time two guys working their match out. I've never experienced that.
But then, like, for me, I've seen a thousand times. Like, oh, yeah. But they guess first time, you're like, well, yeah. It's
a fun experience.
It's difficult at first
to
learn everything.
Mm-hmm. And going back to that, you've always been very, like, even before I was the guy behind the curtain, you've always been super welcoming and giving me compliments on the show and everything like that, and I really, really appreciate it. And like I said, the way you attack the business is something I look at. I always say that you and Phil Stamper are very high on my list of people who I really respect in the business because of the way your love for the business. You've been around it so long, you still have that love to put everyone else over and really showcase good talent.
Yeah, right now, currently, my goal is one day open up a school, but not just any kind of school. It's like, I want a place like a community center type school where kids like who love wrestling, but they're too afraid to come out. And because back when I was in school, sometimes you don't let the word out that you like wrestling because they'd be like, oh man, you like that fake stuff,
mm-hmm.
this and that. You know, there's kids who actually who are really smart. Like it could be like a nice community sandwich hang out instead of being out on the street. Hey, if you got a writing background and you want to get into wrestling, maybe you can be a writer. Come write a script for our show. If you got a photography background, come down, take pictures, use it for your portfolio for your school. Same thing with video and graphics. You can come down and do all that stuff for our show and use it back at your own school for get grades off our production.
Yeah.
You know, so it helps them. It'll help them to get a foot in the door of a live event to do and taking it back to their teachers and showing them, hey, look what I did a weekend or whatever. Can I get a grade for this? Can I use this as part of my project or whatever? And I would like to do that, though. It's like it's one hand washing the other. You're keeping them off the street too, and hopefully they'll help progress the wrestling business instead of us keeping certain people out. Mm-hmm. There's some people you got to latch onto because not only do you might need them, but they actually might need you as well.
Yeah,
that's what I'm learning now. Like I said, I've been doing this podcast now for 3 years, and people are like, what are you using your setup? I said, I have a camera, a laptop, a mixing board, and microphones. They're like, hey, can you record hard cam, and we use your soundboard so we can record commentary? I'm like, I guess so. And then next thing I know, I'm putting a whole show together using my equipment, and I just help put content out. And I was like, I didn't know it was... like that's the avenue I would ever even be in this mm-hmm. wrestling. And I just thought we were going to be guys in my kitchen talking to a guy who's in the business about podcasting. And here we are 3 years later and I'm helping putting productions together.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild. And even if you've never had ambitions to ever step in between the ropes and be a worker, how you're saying there is many things that you can do that can help.
Yeah. If you
elevate this business,
love wrestling, want to be involved somehow. You don't have to wrestle. You
can yeah.
Lots of stuff.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. But let's get into our first thing here is the Nick Gage. Let's start with you here, Chief. What is your thoughts on the deathmatch wrestling?
And you've probably met Nick Gage, right? I don't know.
No, I have personally not met Nick Gage ever.
You're hot.
I seen videos, I heard stories, but as far as the deathmatch stuff goes, I am not a fan of it whatsoever. I'm like, okay, the hardcore stuff, like when ECW, when it, you know, it was violent, but it wasn't like this deathmatch stuff though.
Yeah.
Type of violence. It might have got to some points near it, but it's not what that is, because when you see the exploding light tubes, they got chemicals in it and stuff like that, and you got gashes in your body. Are they really going to pay your medical bills? Seriously? Yeah, they might need to pay for the ambulance or something. I don't know. Depends on the promoter and who you're working for. If they're making buck, hey, that's great. But if not, in the end, you know, those chemicals are going in your body and it's going to affect you later on down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I said before.
And just
even if they get $200, which they're probably not getting, if you get cut and you got to get 10 stitches even, which isn't that big a cut, that the bill's going to be more than $200.
Well, wasn't there a situation in an outbreak show where someone got cut?
Yeah,
and they're like, don't
to stitch them up.
They're like, stitch me up here because I don't want to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because today, just like, if you ain't got insurance for us, you know, like me, luckily for me now, you know, it took me so many years, like, from not wrestling and then actually getting good actual 9-to-5 jobs where you get insurance and stuff like that. Hey, I'm getting stuff done to me. I'm actually getting checked out by doctors. I'm like, and they're on my case worse than anybody, you know, so I'm popping. So now I'm a pill popper at my age, you know, for medical reasons, for, you know, not personal, but medical reasons. So yeah, it's just like, the whole, deathmatch scene. It's not me. Hey, for other people, fine, go ahead. You can cheer them on all you want. But at the end of the day, here's the thing is, those same people cheering for them, those people, a lot of them are not going to go and do that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, some fans actually went on to become deathmatch wrestlers themselves because they just wanted to do it. Like, hey, cool. Look, I can go through plate glass and whatnot.
I feel
I can set myself on fire.
I feel if I went to a deathmatch, I already have a problem buying merchandise, and it's not so much I have a problem with. I enjoy owning it. Like I enjoy supporting and giving that person the $20 for their t-shirt. But another reason why I do it too is if I'm like, oh my God, that guy, like they had a really rough match in there. Like, or I drove all the way from Baltimore. It's like, I'm buying his shirt or her shirt or their shirt because what their sacrifice, I respect. I respect that. If I went to a deathmatch show and I seen someone go through a plate of light tubes, I'm like, I hope they have some type of merch because I have to buy it. Because if, like, you know what I mean? Because like, I look at those medical expenses or if they get hurt or the travel to get there or, you know, like the simple things. And it's just, it's not that I hate the deathmatch style because I think it has a place in wrestling. It's just as someone who truly cares about the people in the ring, I just don't want to see you get hurt.
Yeah.
And I know the illusion is like it cuts you, but they're all surface cuts and they're not super deep. But still, it does happen where they can get cut super deep because the light tube doesn't really break the right way. Like, yeah.
In this Nick Gage thing.
Yeah. So in this documentary, it goes on to how he started his wrestling story, and then obviously him and his brother had a falling out because he started falling in really hard times with like drugs and alcohol and stuff like that, and then he robs a bank.
And I didn't know he went to jail, got out, and then went back to jail.
I did not know. Broke probation. And then his brother committed suicide.
Justice Payne. I seen him a few times. I don't think I met him. I'm just gonna say I didn't, but I possibly might have. I seen wrestle CZW. He wasn't bad.
Yeah, but but Nick Gage and the documentary really heavily leans on Nick Gage kind of help forming and keeping
Deathmatch
GCW alive and the owner and promoter kind of never really turning his back on him either. Like, hey, you got me here.
Yeah, Brett Lauderdale, who I remember doing shows way back. I think he might have did Tate shows or something. I remember him.
So I really like that aspect of where they had the owner of GCW really saying like, no, man, like, yeah, this guy fell on hard times. And in a situation where we have now where people are just like, we're canceling this person. Let's get him out of here forever.
Yeah.
It's like, no, man, people struggle. And the struggles and his and what this person did to possibly get them canceled could be the result of this business. Because this is, like you said before, this is not tap dancing. This is not ballet. These are people actually putting their lives out there. And some people get hurt and some people resort to pain pills. Some people resort to alcohol. Some people live that lifestyle where they're on the road and they get caught up in some stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but it does happen. But so this guy was like, listen, man, I know you fell on some hard times. I'm not going to turn my back on you, which really in my eyes, gives me a lot of respect for GCW as a company and him as an owner. Because he could have been like any other owner. Like, cool, man. Thanks for.
I think I would have cut bait.
Thanks for 2 months ago when you went through a light tube and cut your ribs open so bad that you had to get light flighted out of the arena.
Yeah.
Now you're in jail. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, no, man. Like, you went through some stuff. I'm gonna stick through with it. And Nick Gage seemed to bounce back better than ever. And
I never understood the appeal with Nick Gage. I'm not a deathmatch fan either. But like, there's a connection with the fans. There is.
They love him.
Like Moxley said, the thing Vince would kill for something like that. Maybe not, but I see what he was getting at.
Yeah,
but
he's like John. He's like the Deathmatch John Cena.
He does have a connection, so I mean, I guess if you like that, that's funny to.
And he said he never really knew how big his audience was until he was in jail, and these fans reached out and wrote him letters and said, like, man, like, I hope you get better. Like,
yeah.
And those were the positive things that helped him get
better.
Which
is good, yeah.
Which I encourage people. Like, I know we say in the podcast all the time, like, man, feedback and support is super helpful. Like, let us know you're listening. Like, because I look at the numbers, and our numbers are really high, and it's just like, I only get told by, like, three people, like, hey, man, good episode.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I need that, but sometimes that's good to hear. Sometimes that can help.
And especially, like, if you're in jail for
this 5 years. This guy's in jail thinking his whole life's over, and everyone's going to forget about him.
And you get out, and they make a show for you, and then you get caught with drugs and go back in.
Yeah. Because the thing with this, with anything, pro wrestling, podcasts, any, like, sports, they're going to keep moving even though you stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you're not in the limelight anymore, you can be forgotten about. And that fan feedback is what kept him pushing.
Yeah.
And here he is now getting a resurgence. He's going to have another match with Moxley. You know, he almost killed a celebrity in David Arquette. Yeah. Almost cut his neck open. It was an interesting documentary. I definitely recommend.
It was someone that I didn't know much about. And it was like, this is interesting. I didn't like it as much as Brian Pillman or any of the other ones, but I still was like, it was interesting.
Yeah, it was more of a indie style story,
yeah,
which is cool.
If you don't know about death matches, you can find all about it.
Yeah, it was nuts. Really cool stuff there. Well, let's get on to the next one here. The
Collision in Korea. Do you know anything about that, Chio? That show they did in Korea for WCW and, like, New Japan.
At first, I heard about the story about when Flair and all of them were over there, and Scott Norton, I guess they were interrogating them guys and all. Like, I heard different stories.
Yeah.
And then I seen the trailer for it for that episode, and I really wanted to see it, but I didn't get to see it yet.
Good.
Because I believe that was in North Korea.
Yes.
Was it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and from my understanding, the guys in North Korea, they're really strict. Everything is on that side of the border is propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, everything news, everything is manufactured from inside. So anything news that you hear about the outside world, you really ain't hearing from anything from the outside. It's them in North Korea telling you how bad everyone else is and how great they are.
Mm-hmm.
So when I believe when WCW came in and they have their ways of what they want to do, and North Korea, I believe they wanted to shine for their home people and stuff like that. I guess they wasn't trying to have it. But like I said, I didn't get to see the documentary, so I can't tell you word for word. But I know they're very strict. They're very petty
mm-hmm.
over there. And if it's something that they don't like, you could be like one of those reporters and end up missing.
Yeah.
Yes. So this whole thing kicks off with Inoki, right? Am I saying his name?
Yeah.
Inoki. He's a huge politician. He's not only just a professional wrestler, but he's also uses his celebrity and his wrestling to politician and get into politics and try to do a bunch of things. He's petitioned. He had a boxing match with or a boxing wrestling match with Muhammad Ali. Match, yeah. The guy has done amazing things. So he reached out to Eric Bischoff and WCW and said, let's do a working deal where we swap talents, or our talent comes to you, you go to them. And Eric Bischoff and his genius is like, yes, of course. If I can get my guys over in your area, they shine in Japan, then they come to America, like, your audience, we're going to swap audiences, which is smart.
And get double the customers.
Yep. So Inoki gets in contact with, I guess, some people, and he said, hey, I want to do this peace thing where we're going to have a peace day, and it's going to be showcasing professional wrestling in North Korea.
Yeah.
And Eric Bischoff said, sure. And he got Muhammad Ali involved. He got a bunch of people involved, and they all kind of went to the locker room and said, who wants to go do this?
Yeah, well, he said, who's the first person? What? Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. Up.
That don't work for me, brother.
Not doing that, brother. Hulk Hogan said, not a chance. So when Hulk Hogan said no, obviously his second pick was Flair, which Flair was kind of pissed he wasn't the first pick, but it's Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. So they all agree to go do this. They fly into North Korea. The documentary really showcases just a few people. They Chris Benoit was there. Yeah. Obviously he didn't speak in this documentary. Too Cold Scorpio.
Yeah.
Hawk was there, but not showcased.
Steiner Brothers
were there. Sting was there. No, wait. Was Sting there? No, Sting was not there.
Was
he? I don't remember. There was a women's match there. Like, yeah, I don't know everyone, yeah. but the main ones in this documentary for the most part was Scorpio, Scott Norton, and Eric Bischoff. I feel like it was one more talent.
Yeah, they didn't have Flair on there, which is
no. Yeah. Flair didn't talk in the documentary. But yeah, so they get over there.
They had Inoki actually on the
documentary. And Inoki, yeah. And I guess he said that as we're flying over, Scorpio said you can literally see down where the tanks and cannons are pointing one way and the tanks and cannons are pointing the other way. They land, and everything from that point on, they literally took their passports. They ran through all their luggage and baggage, like treated them like garbage. They had personal security that followed them everywhere they went. They couldn't do really anything. Eric Bischoff gets in the car with his personal assistant, this lady, and she literally says, congratulations, you are the seventh American to be on North Korean soil and live to tell about it.
Yeah, and that's like, oh, that's not the good stuff.
She goes, oh, there have been many, but only seven have talked about it. Yeah. So how you said, very propaganda. So the first thing they have to do when they get there, they ship them to this statue of one of their fallen leaders.
Yeah, and they have to go give flowers to it or something.
And they have to go give flowers. So it looks like the Americans and the Japanese are coming to... Oh, who was the manager that was in the documentary?
Sonny Ono.
Yes. Oh, yeah, Sonny Ono. So all these people have to go up and praise this statue as if they're...
Yeah, and so happy to be
there. And then all of the interviews, Flair said, we're very honored to be here. And everything was like... Because their whole shtick in North Korea is they're telling Chio was saying that the rest of the world is awful and they're all evil. The enemy and they're all evil entities, especially the Japanese, because Japanese occupied
they hate Korea Japanese,
for a long time, and the Japanese army was not the most kind army back in the day. They were very ruthless, so they have a bad taste in the mouth of the Japanese, and the Japanese are kind of the ones setting this up, and then the Americans are involved. So it looks as if when you go into their country, you're the one bending the knee to them.
Yeah,
they are the superior, and that's just the way.
And they said they liked Inoki because his trainer was actually Korean.
He had a Korean trainer.
Whacked by the Yakuza.
Yep. So there was all that there where everything that you were saying was all propaganda. They had to go in there and they had to give the flowers. They had to bow. There's a moment
they
had to
go back to their hotel room and just stay there and not do anything.
So during this thing, they're on a bus and Scorpio and Animal get into a fist fight.
Yeah, which I knew nothing about this.
Yeah. Neither did Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
That's because they literally said, did you know that Too Cold Scorpio was...
I got JoJo here.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the podcast. Photographer extraordinaire.
She snuck down in her onesie. sorry for cutting you off.
You're good. She's a celebrity. We're honored. So Scorpio, I guess, had some beef with Flair and had some beef with some other people in the locker room. And I guess they said, where's Flair at? And he goes, fuck him. Tell him to get his own bus.
Yeah.
And then Hawk turned around, or Animal turned around and says, what did you say that for? Or was it Hawk? Hawk said, Hawk. Yeah. What are you saying that for? And he goes, I don't know if you heard what I said, but did you not understand where I said he can go fuck himself or when I called him a pussy?
Yeah.
So then they get into a fist fight in the bus. And the whole time this is going on, like, Scorpio's like, I have to get him. And so they fought like two or three times on this trip.
And the Japanese broke it up.
These
guys.
To the point where Scorpio made makeshift shivs or shanks.
I gotta kill this motherfucker.
And he was going to kill Hawk.
In Korea. Like, what was in he Korea. Thinking? He was one of the stars of the show, though. He was so good.
Yeah. And it all got dissolved. It never happened.
If only Hawk was alive to give his...
Tell his side. And then Scott Norton got in trouble because he finally had an opportunity to call his wife, and his wife's like, I haven't talked to you in a week. What is going on with you? Like, he goes, I can't do anything here. Like, we're on complete strict lockdown. He goes, you don't understand how stressful this is here.
And he's like, I hate it here.
And he goes, I hate it here. This country is a fucking shithole.
Yeah.
And the phone cut out, and they came storming into the room and said, come with us, and put guns to him. Took him downstairs and said, you cannot say any of this anymore. If you say one more thing, you won't make it home.
Yeah. I heard this story before. I don't know if it was Flair on his podcast when he had it or Scott Norton was on something. I heard that before. So that's the story. And Scott Norton was good in this too.
Yeah. Scott Norton was awesome in this documentary.
You can't negatively say anything bad about North Korea, or you are done literally.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So, as soon as you said that part about the phone clicking, I knew what was going on. They're on the other end. They're listening to every word that's going on for anything like it. Like, if he's feeding her information about North Korea, oh, you're a spy. Oh, man, he probably would have got shot if they would have thought he was a spy.
Yeah. So the show, the day of the show, it's a 2-day show.
Yeah.
The first day, they said, whatever you've seen on a Super Bowl halftime show pales in comparison to what North Korea put on that day.
170,000. He's like, this is a great draw. And he's like, oh, it was forced attendance.
It was forced. I think he said 300.
Yeah, it was.
It was super high. It was like a super high number. It blew up. It blew WrestleMania, any WrestleMania, out of the water. And I guess they're like, oh, people are really into this. And they're like, no, they're forced to be here. If they didn't show up, they were in trouble.
And they said it was so hard to wrestle because they're all quiet until the main event.
Well, that type of stuff, what they do, like what you just said, they were forced. It's like, let's say a leader passes away. They all got to like literally cry and like pray. Like they really like these people probably hate the guy, but they got to show so much pity that they loved him. It was the greatest. And they're crying. Otherwise, something would happen to them, to the people themselves.
Yeah.
So basically, you got to cry over someone who you literally hate.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it's insane.
And they can't even talk about it if they're being oppressed because they'll get in trouble for it. But I think when I heard the documentary, like supposedly their leader is like a god to them.
He's like
they think he has special powers and stuff. Like he's like Santa Claus or he's always listening.
Like the king.
But even on a supernatural level, they're afraid to talk negatively because they always think they're being hurt.
Well, then they see people just get shot.
Yeah. So actually, the day before the show, Bischoff wakes up early and goes for a jog and didn't tell nobody. And he said he was jogging. It was like early in the morning and the sun just started rising. And all of a sudden, it was a ghost town and all these people start walking around. And then he starts running down the street and people are fleeing from him like he's a monster.
They said they'd never seen a white person before. The thing on their TV is Korean people.
Well, they'd never seen a white person. And what they do know of Americans is that we're so evil and angry and they'll kill you. So they were like women and children and men were running away from Eric Bischoff with his mullet just running down the street. And I guess when he got back to the room,
he did kill WCW.
He gets back to this room and they're like, why did you do that? Yeah. He goes, I went for a jog. I didn't realize like I couldn't go for a run. They're like, you're in North. Like none of this clicked. Scott Norton said, he goes, you think back in the day we lived that wrestling lifestyle. He goes, we learned very, very quickly that shit came to a halt when we landed. Like they tried to play pool. They got in trouble playing pool because the ball hit came off the table.
They took all the ball. Like you just sit in your room and wrestle and go home. Yeah.
So the day of the show, very, very packed, did really, really well. For the most part, no one really gave a shit that they were watching wrestling until the main event, Inoki and Flair. They said pretty much Flair, because he's Ric Flair and he's the greatest in the world, just put Inoki over amazingly.
Like a lot of people probably never even seen wrestling. They had no idea what it was.
Yeah. But by the end, like literally all these matches are pin drops. And then the very last match, Flair and Inoki, the place came unglued.
Yeah, ain't that something?
Yeah. That a Japanese and an American, bleach blonde, white-haired American go in there and just tear the house down. The two greatest in their generation just go in there into a hostile land.
Yeah.
And
you can watch, the whole thing is up on YouTube.
You can watch the whole event?
Yeah.
I definitely want to go back and watch it. But documentary was fantastic.
It's one I didn't know. I heard Bischoff say that story too about running on his podcast.
Yeah.
But
Bischoff said, he goes, if you Wikipedia the largest wrestling event of all time, I did that shit.
Go cocky. Bischoff's good too in all these.
Yeah, he's really good. And Jericho narrating, fantastic.
I like that.
Just a good show. And then the last one.
Yeah, the newest one just came out, Thursday night?
The Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, the Ultimate Warrior. And then A&E had one that came out Monday on Warrior, which I didn't see.
Yeah. So this one, I think when you seen it on social media, a lot of people were, they picked out the middle part and kind of rode that pretty heavily.
Mm-hmm. It did not touch on him in WCW at all.
No.
So I'm like, it should have maybe a little bit.
And they had Bischoff talking a lot.
Yeah.
And they talked nothing about WCW.
Which was weird.
They didn't talk about the reason he stepped away for a little bit a few times because of steroid use and other things. But it pretty much covers like at the beginning, he meets this girl. He's a bodybuilder, starts wrestling. Jim Cornette pretty much gets in there and just says.
Jim Cornette hates him.
He's like, I'm not going to sit here and say like good. He's like, the guy had a great look and sucked in the ring.
Yeah,
he sucked in the mic. He sucked in the ring.
That's true.
And he didn't want to learn.
No, he didn't care to learn. Like, him and Goldberg have a lot of similarities.
Yeah, but then it kind of like his ex-wife kind of says like, it's not that he didn't want to learn. It's just like a lot of the critiquing and the people, the boys backstage saying he sucked and everything like that, it did bother him. There's always two sides to every story, yeah. You know, and we always say let's preach mental health and help people with mental health and this, but if the person, you know, may be struggling, but you only point out negative things, like where does your let's do mental health start and stop? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, it's obviously,
like if he's an asshole, then no. But if he's a nice guy, then yes.
Yes. You know? So obviously he was always very. Now I'm not one either. I'm not team conservative. I'm not team. You know, politician. I'm not anti anybody, but I also feel that you have the right to be that if you want to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If that's your belief, awesome. But if you're going out of your way to stunt people and saying this, so he was very anti-gay, mm-hmm. very anti-black people of color of all races for the most part, because he went on these conservative rants and
like real far right wing.
Yeah. But the thing is when he was doing that, no one seemed to care. But now that we're in a super polarized political environment.
He was out of wrestling at that point.
Yeah.
They're like, well, he's a warrior.
I guess a lot of people just kind of wrote him off. But like even previous to that, I guess he did struggle with mental health issues. Yeah. And then he got super conservative, which I get it. Like, here's the thing. When people are making content or trying to stay relevant,
they do something.
You have to pick a lane. And normally the easiest lane to fall into is just be conservative because it's kind of like being a country music artist. If you sing one or two twangy songs, 10,000 people will follow you.
The key things.
Yeah.
Trucks.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that, though. I would say the best bet is to be independent, but nobody wants to do that. You want to be either conservative or liberal. I look at I couldn't register as independent on the vote and stuff. I had to pick either one party or the other.
Yeah.
I look at myself as being I want to word this correctly. don't shoot me if I get it wrong. As a conservative Democrat or a liberal Republican.
Okay.
Because they both have good sides, they both have bad sides. That's why I like independent in the middle.
That's where I would lie, I don't also vote. So
so that's why they always put conservatism with Republicans and liberalism with the Dems. So I split the two up and I mix it up together.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
In today's society with the cancel culture and all that stuff, the time I grew up, you know, you do have, you know, I don't want to go and say, hey, today we got a bunch of sissies and this and that and da da da, where people cry and whine over anything offends them. But at the same time, I learned to grow where that, okay, you can pretty much, you want to say what you want, you want to have your freedom of speech. But just like Wordo, there's a time and place for everything. You can't just blurt it out because, yes, it might offend somebody. It might trigger somebody. Somebody might be having a bad day. Somebody may not take their meds. Someone, he might say something about anyone with the LGBTQ in the community where he might offend somebody where that individual maybe had some issues with their parents or family who didn't like them coming out, and then they might snap on him. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's all right to be conservative, but sometimes you got to think of other people as well. Because trust me, there's a lot of times where we get offended, like even conservatives themselves, they get offended because this group of people is doing this. Well, don't you think they're getting offended because you're doing this? Oh, well, I don't care, this and that. It's a two-way street. It goes both ways. So they need everybody on both sides need to stop and think what they're doing before we spew stuff out of our mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the warrior, though, I could be wrong. If he really felt this stuff, then obviously it's not good. But I also felt like just because of his personality and what we've always seen of the warrior, I think he chose that route because it was keeping him relevant.
Noticing him more.
Yeah, I think.
I'm sure he probably had some beliefs like that. Like, yeah, if I say this wild stuff, that people will know and they'll buy my book.
Exactly. So, like, example here, our podcast does well. I feel it can do better, and if I really wanted to do better, especially in the world of wrestling, I would just turn to a shoot style show and have people come on and trash everybody and just spew out negativity.
Get the gossip.
Because negativity will get you more views than if you have normal in the middle conversations.
Yeah.
If I wanted to be huge, I'll jump off my roof on toys and say woot woot before I do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's an easy route you can take to get popular, but it's not always being yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And I think some, especially now in a really polarized political community, I think you have to be an extreme one or the other, because that's, people gravitate to the extremism because it's like watching a car accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the people in the middle are kind of like, you need to pick a side. It's like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
No, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm open for conversation. I want to learn your views and your views, and let's meet in the middle on it, you know? But yeah, so I think a lot of Warriors was, he was picking a lane to stay relevant.
Yeah.
And I think that side crowd was kind of like, I'm not, I'll say it, but like the Trump side. If you pick that Trump side, his crowd speaks the loudest. They go out there with their bullhorns, and they go out there with their hats and their flags, and they're really vocal. So when you turn around and see, oh, here's a guy, his popularity is through the roof. But when it came down to the votes, he wasn't as popular as we thought he was, because not everyone screams from the rooftops what they like.
Yes.
But if you are someone who's more into the ego and more into what you hear, not so much what you receive, I think that's the route where people are like, it feeds that ego boost where like, oh, these people are all there. There's hundreds of thousands of people here supporting me, but there's 100,000 people supporting you somewhere else, but maybe they're not as loud or vocal about it. So a part of me kind of thinks that's where the Warrior was sitting at.
Yeah, I do.
Because he was very ego.
Yeah, I think he was an asshole and he was a little nuts.
Yeah.
I think with Warrior, I think it has like, if you try to compare, like I said, I didn't see the Dark Side, but like I said, if you watch the A&E version as well as the past documentaries, you can almost see where he almost gets where he's at, where he's coming from, because you look at his upbringing. I guess his father wasn't in his life, for one. So he's raised by his mother. He had like, what, three brothers, I think, and one sister or something like that.
His father was but he was very terrible. His dad, he was openly cheating on his mom and abusive, I believe. And
I think he was out of there when he was still young.
Yeah. He had experience,
And then when he made it to WWE at the time, WWF, you got to think about who was the ones who welcomed him in with open arms the most?
Vince.
It was the McMahons.
Yeah.
Vince and Linda. Vince and Linda are Trump supporting conservatives themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big business, this and that. So, and like, she was actually one of his picks for one of the roles in his cabinet.
Yeah.
Linda was. And just in general, like with all the stuff going on in the world, with what happened with the whole double impeachment and the whole thing that happened on January 6th, this and that, there was an outcry in the wrestling world about, you know, hey, have him removed from the Hall of Fame. But you think Vince will do that? No, because that's his buddy.
And his wife,
he's not going to remove him.
Dana Warrior is a huge part of their company right now.
Yeah, with that Warrior Award thing, which is, you know,
his wife is still tied in there.
Maybe he should have a Warrior Award.
But
if he did believe that, you shouldn't get rid of the Hall of Fame, because that doesn't affect his wrestling. He wasn't killing people.
Yeah,
he was saying bad stuff, but like, I mean, it wasn't that. It wasn't like he said, I hate this person here. I mean, you know, he said like, well, Queen don't make the world work or something. Like, that's terrible, but like,
I kind of look at it like this. If you're someone who was inspired, we'll just use the Warrior example here, but I think it can go with any route. If when you were a kid, when Hulk Hogan told you be a good person, eat your vitamins, drink your milk, say your prayers and be a good person, if you took that positivity and you actually made a good go of it of your life, and Hogan was your positive influence.
John Cena.
Yeah,
John Cena.
He that worked. And then you turn to a 30-year-old adult, and now you find out Hulk Hogan's possibly racist. Does that erase the positive he did for you?
No.
Sure, like maybe you should maybe step back and be like, oh man, maybe my hero wasn't who I thought he was, but he got you through a lot of your life being a positive influence before you even knew that negative spin.
Yeah.
So do you just like cancel everything you did your entire life being a positive human. Like the warrior was a motivational speaker as well. He helped people get in shape. He like, there's a lot of things he did to inspire people. So like we made the joke like, oh, Andy's wearing a shirt, easy to get canceled. Yeah. But maybe the warrior did something in for somebody to say like, I still support him. I don't agree with his views on gay marriage or are people of color, but this message he put out for me inspired me to be a better person. I still love you as the LGBT. I still love you as a person of color. And I understand that maybe he didn't, but this one thing he did for me helped me become a better person.
Yeah, I see that.
You know what I mean?
What we all got behind was Warrior the character, not Warrior the man.
Yes.
So it's like it hurts a lot of these documentaries is like we see our heroes. They're on a pedestal of who we grew up watching, who we cheered for, who we booed, but they were our characters. They were our Marvel. They were our DC. They were our characters in the wrestling world. But then when you peel all that back and you see the man behind, you see all whatever negative stuff, whatever trauma they going through, whatever demons they go through, it's almost a shot in the heart to each and every one of us once in a while. If you know, like, damn, I really, you know, okay, we love, but we gotta stop and think. We love the character way he played. Just like in movies, there's a lot of actors out there where we love their characters, that superhero character, whoever it is. But then you got, you know, what they do outside of there. Hey, he smacked his wife around. He did this. He did that. He did drugs. Whatever. You know, but you still love the character itself. So that's one thing fans should not let go of. We should embrace the character, what we grew up on, our childhood, embrace it and stuff like Bill Cosby. Okay. I'm just going to throw it out there. It has nothing to do with wrestling.
Yeah.
Just like him. A lot of us love the Cosby Show, Dr. Huxtable, great guy, Family Guy, Fat Albert, whatever. We love that. And then all this stuff comes out about him years later, and it's like, oh man. But you stop and you think, okay, let's don't think about all that negative stuff of the man behind. It's the character who we loved or what they
now listen betrayed. Bill Cosby did something bad. He got prosecuted. He got put in jail for doing those bad things. But once again, so we're not going to forget, rephrasing what you said, but not so much forget what he did, understand that he wasn't always a good person, but the values he taught during the Cosby Show.
And no one said, let's go back and delete all the episodes of Cosby Show. Yeah. Let's get rid of Fat Albert. Like,
yeah. No. So it's a weird,
it is.
It is. It's a tough situation to go. I don't want to come off as I'm being insensitive saying that, you know, this guy was anti-LGBT because I'm very pro-LGBT. Yeah. Like I would consider myself an ally, you know? But I don't want to say like, because I'm giving the warrior a pass here that I'm not anti anything. Like I don't agree with Warrior said, but I'm just looking at the warrior as how we're saying here as a character, as a guy who,
as a character, he was awesome. Who was this? I mean, I'm
going to be completely honest. Growing up, I was never a warrior. Yeah. I'm not saying I wasn't a warrior fan. And I've said this in the podcast past, a warrior and Hogan never did it for me.
But when you watch a match, you're like, who is it? Like, it was compelling.
When his music hit and he ran
the
down,
the music was awesome. That was one best thing that he really lucked out with, getting awesome music there.
Yeah. He
couldn't wrestle, but
for the most part, that was a documentary.
If you go back and watch his matches, he would hit the ropes wrong. He would lock up wrong and like simple things that like, well, that's just not.
Care. He wouldn't slam people right.
Yeah, he would jump on their head. He hurt Bobby Heenan. He would just hurt because he didn't care.
Yeah.
And it's like, like they said in the documentary too, like you got to take care of the person that's in there. If you don't take care of the person, then get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And
you know who was also like that a lot in the beginning, which was, you know, they were still stiff. It was the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
Again, them two just go out there and just manhandle anybody. You know, they were exact same way. They just beat the piss out of people.
Weren't the Steiners like that too?
I figure as time goes on, you know, they learned their lesson because then they're in there against other guys who just like won't take their shit. I'm sorry, am I allowed to curse here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've cursed like four times.
Well, I'm trying to watch myself.
No, you're good. This is Tornado Tag, baby. Let them fly.
Yes. So they go out there and, you know, just like Warrior, he's going to get in there with someone who can work and he's not going to take a shit and he's going to deliver those same potatoes that he gave them. He's going to get his receipt back. And Warrior's only as good as, okay, you watch him against the jobbers, like how Andy said, he didn't care, throw him, this, that, pound him. But when he's in there, guys with like Rick Rude,
mm-hmm.
he was a straight up badass, Rick Rude.
Yeah.
You know, and just other guys who've been around the business who can really go.
Cornette spoke on that.
Yeah. And like I said, he was the first one that just popped that just popped in my head. Like, take Honky Tonk Man. Even though he went over for the IC belt from Honky Tonk, I know Honky Tonk was able to handle himself
yeah.
if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cornette and even said, he goes,
Rick Rude could.
Cornette said, he goes, perfect. He wasn't amazing in the ring, but when you take the biggest superstars in the world that can actually put on great matches and tell
better,
them
yeah.
and tell them to just pretty much lay down, of course Ultimate Warriors are like the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know? He goes, but you can that train can only go so long.
Yeah, that's not the same thing with Goldberg. Like, at a certain point, like, okay, all these guys are making him look good, but then now he has to pick the ball and look good, and they go, oh.
Yeah,
it goes past a certain
that whole time that you're getting pushed over, you have to then do the work to get better yourself.
Yeah,
and
if
just
you don't
never
get better,
did.
Then like Warrior and Goldberg could have been much bigger stars, and made more money, but they just didn't care.
Yeah, and then the documentary ends with his Hall of Fame, and then where he did go up and apologize yeah. to Jake the Snake and a few other
and
people.
And Jake said he was going to beat the shit out of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, Jake said I was
quarters.
Looking for him the whole night to beat the hell out of him, and right before I had a chance to get to him, he tapped me on the shoulder and said I apologize yeah, for who I was.
I never knew that. They had a world title plan for Jake. He was going to beat Warrior and win the belt. Like that would have been awesome.
Yeah. So at SummerSlam, Jake was supposed to go over and beat the Warrior, but that night is the night they Warrior hit the curtain.
Yeah,
who was he chasing?
Before that, it was Warrior. I forget who he was wrestling. Somebody else. We'd get, the next program was Jake. It's going to set up. Jake was going to beat him for the belt.
Yeah. So yeah, going into it, but there was the show was Warrior was chasing someone through the curtain with a chair.
Slaughter?
Was it Slaughter?
I forget.
The way they shot it in the documentary was beautiful because the way they shot it was they showed the actual footage of Warrior coming through and then shot the recreation
coming out. Through.
And I guess Vince turned around and says, hey, you're fucking fired.
Yeah.
And then he looked
over. He made all the demands. I want as much money as Hogan. I want the. And that's when he was really out of his mind.
Yeah. And Vince fired him. Jim Cornette read the firing letter too on the documentary. And Jake the Snake was the best in the documentary. He goes, I was about to be the world champion and make all the money in the world and be amazing.
Yeah.
And Vince looked at me and goes, one of the most talented people in my locker, but you are the most unlucky son of a bitch I've ever met in my life. he's like, I was about to be world champion and this asshole ruined it.
The wife had a good line. She's like, that's when Jim Hellwig left and the Warrior came home and she started crying.
Yeah.
Because he was losing his mind.
Yep.
I think he did have mental health problems, obviously. I
mean, his ex-wife had a great line too. She goes, when your husband's on the road, you don't have to worry about all the people who want to have sex with your husband. You have to worry about the lady who wants to take over your life.
Yeah.
And that happened to her.
Yeah. And what was I going to say?
The line?
There was another good line. I forgot.
Well, while he's thinking about whatever he's trying to figure out, do you honestly really can see Jake Roberts at that time in that era as world champion? Because I can't. I like not until Brett got the title.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I would see anyone of that size, like slim wise. I at the time I'm always looking for the big guys, like. You know, like Savage, Warrior, Hogan, you know, all the big guys and stuff. But I could not picture Jake being the world champion at that time.
He wasn't a babyface, though, was he? He was a heel? I think heel Jake
the
Snake, where he could have used the snake to keep the title, I think would have been interesting.
I don't know. I could kind of see him, but yeah, they want the real jacked up guy.
It was Hogan.
Jake was tall, but he was like lean.
It was Hogan, Savage, and
tall.
Hogan, Savage, and Hogan, Savage, and Warrior were your champions.
Yeah,
much.
And then the Hogan would go up against like Earthquake and Andre and stuff. So,
well, speaking of Andre, you have your Andre back there, on your shirt, and also behind you in your cage.
Oh yeah,
in the cage. Andre was a legendary person who gave
Warrior
a receipt.
That story that they say in the self-destruction of the Warrior DVD, which even if that's a hit piece, but it's designed like that's a fantastic DVD.
Yeah.
It's so good. When he's talking about running, coming 50
miles
an hour.
And he just stuck his fist out.
Here comes Warrior 60 miles an hour. Here he comes 110 miles an hour. Puts his fist out, runs it in, and says, he'll learn.
He's learning.
Yeah, he's learning.
Have you watched the Andre documentary on A&E?
God. It was HBO, and I did see it.
I think it's the same, ain't it?
The HBO one was, I don't know if they did one on A&E, but I didn't see that one. I seen the one they did on HBO.
No, No, it was HBO. My bad.
Yeah, that HBO one was.
I heard it was really good. I didn't see it.
I got emotional twice.
Wow.
Like I almost cried because when like they're like, you think Andre was this larger than life person, which he was, and you thought the world and the life would be so easy, but this is a man who was not built, or the world was not ready for someone like him. Like
yeah.
He flew and traveled all around the country, but didn't have a car that was fit for him. He was in planes that couldn't work for him. Like when he would be on airplanes, now just think of this. In the embarrassment, right, of that alone, of like where we're just people, like, and people weren't like, oh my God, it's so cool, there's Andre. Like,
yeah.
People taunted and made fun of him. And he's on a plane and he drank because he was uncomfortable. Like, I have a joint pain where I'm uncomfortable in a car and I'm a normal size human. This guy had probably way worse joint pain than I ever had. Yeah. And plus, he was throwing his body around. He went to a hotel room. He had to use the tub.
Yeah, to take a shit.
And then just turn the shower on and wait till it to go away. Yeah, like, and he didn't take normal size shits like that too. Like he'd be on a plane and he'd have to use a bucket, and like he would have to like demoralize himself by like getting undressed in front of a crew where they held a bucket underneath him.
Yeah, ain't that something?
Like imagine the fucking embarrassment but like you still have to be a human and do human functions. Like that's just, and like going to sleep on, like he was never comfortable. He couldn't sleep on a bed. He couldn't get in a chair. He couldn't like just it was just such, it sounded like a miserable fucking life for this guy.
Yeah, he's so big.
So sad and depressing, but like but it's still like when people met him, he was still a sweetheart and he treated everyone great. But like, I just couldn't imagine living in a world like that where everything just is like the worst.
Yeah.
Like people are like, oh, I can't fly first class. Like, fuck you. Andre did it. You know, I'm like, Andre could barely fucking do the world. Don't stop complaining. There are people in this lifetime had a lot worse than you. But yeah, it was a tough watch.
Yeah. I was just right there with you when you were saying about how you got teared up for the documentary. Now I know both of you seen the Hogan and Andre match prior to the documentary. We all seen it.
Yeah.
Now after watching the documentary and all his health stuff, did you go back and watch the Andre Hogan match? Like literally watch it really slow and analyze it?
I have not, but I couldn't imagine.
And that's
like,
why he
could really
to the ring in the cart.
Like, yeah.
Because
seriously. Seriously, if you have to rewatch the documentary one more time, do so. But watch the Hogan and Andre match and everything they talked about. Watch Andre in there. And, like, it makes you feel so bad to watch him in this match. Like, you know, because everything you just learned, his health and everything going on, the way he's moving around because of his size and this and that. And then for him being in the shape that he just letting Hogan slam him. In general, all that weight of your own body weight crashing down, even though, you know, we padded, and at the time back then, I believe it was still spring rings and not flex beams. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, for a guy your
you
size.
You say padding like it's a good thing. It's this much.
Yeah. Much. Well, to each his own. Of course, a lot of people don't like our padding and our ring because, like, we got that gym padding.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, it's stiff. Teddy Hart.
Yeah.
but he's doing
great now.
So you gotta go back and rewatch that match and take in what you already saw in the documentary and put that to that match and analyze it, and you'll like, even that match there, after I seen it again, I was almost ready to bawl and cry.
Yeah.
Because of seeing the pain that you know what he's going through.
Yeah.
You know.
Jake was excellent in that documentary too. Cause he's like, dude, I was with, like, they always put me with Andre.
Yeah.
And it just, we became really close friends. And it's like, dude, the fucking guy, like, it was tough. He's like, the one story he told her, he's like, we were driving in a van for like 300 miles. And I gave this guy 3 6-packs and I had maybe half a 6-pack. And I'm like, where's the beer? He's like, drank it all. He goes, I had to get out and piss 3 times. This guy didn't get up to pee once. But like, yeah, it was crazy. But that's pretty much it for the Dark Side of the Ring. We covered a lot of our news and stuff in the main episode.
I think the next one is speaking of Jake Roberts, the Grizzly Smith, and about Jake Roberts and Rockin' Robin.
That's a guy that's crazy. He's Sam Houston. He's still alive to tell a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Grizzly Smith is dead, but I mean, yeah, Jake Roberts and Rock Robin still alive. I don't know if Sam Houston's still alive.
Wasn't Jake's sister?
Yeah, that's Rockin' Robin.
Rockin' Robin?
Yeah.
And, she's going to be at Hamburg, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's nuts. By the way, that Hamburg Fieldhouse, man, that's shaping up to be a day.
Yeah, I really, here's the thing though, I really don't have anything to do with the whole Legends part of it. I'm more just the setup part for the wrestling aspect, making sure everything's in where it should be. So it's like,
we're making a sign that says if Andy's not champ, we're rioting. Yeah. Like the John Cena. If Cena wins, we riot.
Yeah, for RVD. Yeah. Wait, is Andy, are you on that show?
Yes.
No, he's, oh, okay.
He's the, before pandemic.
I'm the number one contender.
He's the number one contender.
You would think it would be like, me and Cortez.
I'm not letting Outbreak forget.
I can't even tell you who's wrestling for Outbreak anymore right now because, like I said, I haven't been to any of their I've been to some tapings, but they keep bringing in different guys, I don't know who's who, anymore right now. I would have to get a whole list of new music.
Yeah, they didn't announce any matches for the show yet or anything. So,
here's the thing: I have to pick your brain about. I'm slowly, because I have equipment and people know I have equipment, I'm being asked to do things here and there. And one of the duties I've been getting tasked with is helping record commentary and possibly doing sound for shows. So I may be pulling up a chair next to you at one of these shows here and picking your ear and learning how to do some things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, commentary wise, you're pretty much almost like
a podcast. Yeah.
Well, it depends on what you plug into. If you're just recording this audio and then overlapping it with the sound, that's one thing. Or unless you're tying into the hard cam or something like that, so it's recorded on the video.
Mm-hmm.
You can go a couple different routes. You know, then you got people who are using the the recording. GoPro Wrestling uses the stuff. I can't think. You know what I'm talking about, Andy, because John Salinas, he has the sling, I believe it's called.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can hook your cell phones up to it as well, and, it'll just stream everything to one location, and you can move everything around, pull this here, pull that there for what camera shoots.
Yeah, Mark has one like that, too.
Yeah.
It's that looks stressful.
And you get it's editing on the fly.
Yeah,
You just watch that and just.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, me. I'm busy doing sound, so I'm gonna stick to that.
Yeah, yeah. I've been learning a little bit of everything. Match editing, audio. I've recorded commentary now on two different wrestling shows, and both times it went pretty well. And then the one show I pretty much did the hard cam with the audio at the same time. And it worked out really well. I mean, the show went on and people enjoyed watching it, but it's terrifying. I went from being just sitting in my kitchen to doing a lot more stuff here. But yeah, the opportunities have been opening up. So I'm just trying to pick people's brain to how to get better or learn different things.
I think sometimes some of the best commentary is like it is live because you don't know what kind of reaction you're really going to get from the commentator and the from the commentary team and the crowd, especially if you're plugging straight into the hard cam. But then I also sometimes like doing post commentary afterwards because sometimes you get commentators saying stuff that they shouldn't be saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you got people in house that you got a script for and you can tell them, look, you need to plug this, talk about that, don't mention this at all, blah, blah, blah. And if you have a good team and you're on and these guys are good at what you can do and you can do post commentary with no issue, hey, that works out great then.
Yeah. I think what happened for me is I think they wanted to do commentary, but they didn't have the equipment to do it. And then every time I go to a wrestling show, I literally pack up all of my stuff that you see here. Plus I have a whole more stuff that I don't use. I have like three or four different setups and I bring everything and they're like, man, we'd really love to do commentary. I'm like, I have microphones and a board. I can record it right now, and then you can just take the file and upload it to your video later. And they're like, really? And I was like, yeah. So then I kind of like wrote myself into doing more things, but it was just like I became an asset. Like you were saying before, I don't know much about the wrestling business. I enjoy watching it, but I have the equipment to help elevate the show in a different way. And I've been kind of just doing that, which has been a lot of fun.
And I was telling, make sure you give them a couple, but don't do it for free all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny with with doing sound, I find myself doing other aspects for people's shows, even though they're not my shows. I turn around, end up like even if I don't take my setup, I just take my sound setup. I'm like, look, you should have this angle that way. This should be looking like that. Or I start talking to some of the talent, like, look, I like as they're going over their matches, I'm like, I'm listening. Hey, come here. No, why don't you do this? I throw myself in agent role. If sometimes on shows where like, oh, I don't know what to do. This guy didn't show up. Well, yo, I got this guy showed up over here and I know him. He worked so and so show and I'm plugging other guys to get on shows, which that happens quite often mm-hmm. where I get guys on shows that were not even on the radar of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that's a great way to because we are getting up to that time here, but I like to end the show with that same kind of energy. You're huge in the independent scene. Let's put some names over. Let's put some people over. Who are some people in the independent scene that have really wowed you? Are some people that people should be on? They should be on people's radar. So let's drop some names.
Oh my God. Right now,
this was no prep. So if you don't get upset that okay, he does not okay. say your name, yeah. I threw yeah. him on the spot yeah. here. Yeah,
No, actually, there is one guy individually that I literally told him straight out. I said, look, I'm from seeing some of your work. I work with you on a couple other shows, but I seen some stuff online too as well. And you remind me a little bit of Dynamite Kid, Chris Benoit, this and that. And I told him, you made me a fan of yours, and that was TJ Crawford.
Okay,
I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah,
where does he wrestle out of?
A lot of stuff he does is over in the New Jersey area. I worked with him over at just recently with Pro Wrestling Magic. He didn't work that night, but he was there when I was talking to him because he got injured.
Pro Wrestling Magic is that the one where Erica Lee? Yes, that is a great championship belt. That Pro Wrestling Magic title she has?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
He worked for, what other one was it? I think it was...
Jersey's got an awesome scene.
I'm going to say VNS, VXS, Violence and...
Oh, yeah, I seen that. VX.
And Suffering.
Yeah, that's it.
Violence and Suffering. And I think, I want to say Invictus Pro, Yeah, Invictus Pro, too, also I believe he worked for. And I think he went down to Florida for Tony Deppen's
beer house
thing he did. Yeah, he worked that, too, I believe, too.
Yeah, I have to rewatch that.
Yeah, so he actually made me a fan of his, you know, nice. Just from watching him work. Because the whole, when he shoots up and you see that, like, that rage, like, it reminds you of like Davey Richards, like you know, you're getting psyched up. Like mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, and then you're watching, I'm like, all right, cool, I can get behind this guy.
Yeah. Any other names you want to put out there?
Yes. A guy who's fairly new, I think maybe about a year or so. He might have been longer, I'm not sure, but I just met him like within a year. Out in he's training right now at Super Crazy Pro Wrestling at the Skid Row Academy, New Jersey, Tony Batista. I watched this kid like a lot of his matches and stuff, and then I'm like, there's something about him that makes me think of Young Rock when he first came in, Blue Chipper.
Yeah.
Like the Blue Chipper type.
Yeah.
He's tall. He's a pretty boy and stuff like that too. But he's arrogant, so he's like The Rock when he turned heel, somewhat.
Okay,
nice.
But yeah, he reminds me of that Rock then, you know.
You know, like, you know, like, whose personality reminds me of that? Darius Carter.
Oh, okay.
With that, like,
I haven't really seen him
that Rock personality. Yeah. Like, I'm better than you and I know it type deal.
What's his name in AEW? Ricky Starks.
Ricky Starks. Yeah, Ricky Starks is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's just like off the top of my head for singles and a tag team.
That's fine.
For women. Oh my God, there's countless of females that come out of Damian Adams' school in New Jersey. It's Team Adams. Team Adams Wrestling Academy. I believe it's called. But a lot of his girls go to AEW and NXT to wrestle.
Yeah. The that jersey brand, that was a Titan. They do some fun stuff. Like I really want to experience a Titan show. They do, and they have a whole women's thing where they just do only women's shows.
That's a Titan Goddess or something. Yeah.
I'm really excited. Like once this all clears up, Titan's definitely a show that I want to go check out in the Jersey area.
Isn't it different, Chio, from like 10 years ago, the women's wrestling, even on an indie scene?
Everything is totally big time different, yeah, like, seriously.
When I got in, it was like, oh, there's so-and-so, and they wrestle each other because they're the only two girls.
Yeah.
and to be honest, there's still promoters out there who think the old school way where they don't want women on their show. There are guys out there who do not want to book women matches at all. And I think I find that horrible.
Yeah, some of the talented people in this women's division now are just
work better than guys.
Yeah, so good.
And I get that it used to be like, oh, well, they're booking her because she looks good and she sucks. But like, and then it was, hey, they're just booking her just because she's female. But now they're actually good.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I was someone who was against women's wrestling for the longest time, but also my women's wrestling growing up was
divas.
Was just divas or bra and panty matches.
Rolling around the ring.
But there was a handful of people that were on the women that were on the roster that I was like, I really like, but unfortunately they're just not in the right time. Like I loved Lita. I loved
Victoria.
Jackie. She had the big boobs. Yeah, they were always falling out. But she was good in the ring. Yeah, she was fantastic in the ring. Like, you knew when there was women back then who were just on the same level as some of the guys. And like Victoria and Jacqueline were like, they killed it. They were awesome. Ivory, yes. They were amazing. Yeah.
There's one in particular that I wish she would step her training game up. If she had the opportunity to go to Damian Adams' school to train over there, because like I said, he's just putting out talent like crazy, and especially the females. And Andy, you know her, Izzy McCoy.
Okay, yeah.
The reason why I say that, because I would have loved to have a bigger part in her training, because a lot of people don't realize or know that you know, she's my niece.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm a little shocked myself because of not because of that, just the fact of like you hear about all these wrestling families out there, and when I started to stop and think about the people in my family who actually got into wrestling, I'm like, damn, I actually got a wrestling family because she's my niece. You know Vince Bono.
Yeah.
That's my cousin. His son wrestled a little bit. For a short time.
I didn't know that.
I have a cousin on my father's side who sent me pictures of him wrestling in Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow.
Which he's retired. That JoJo, she almost started training.
Yeah.
But then she turned to photography. I'm like, eh. But now.
To be a lot easier on her body later on.
Yeah.
But now I got my grandsons are coming up now.
Nice.
So I'm hopefully to get my hands on them. So I'm kind of blessed now. I can kind of say like I have a wrestling family, but I think I'm the head honcho.
Yeah.
I'm head of the table here.
There
baby.
You go.
Because I'm the only one who's actually still real going though. I think.
Yeah.
You're the Stu Hart.
Yeah, you're the Stu.
Yeah, but, that's me.
But thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us tonight. Mm-hmm. This is definitely not going to be the last. Like I said, you're in our private group chat now. So when you see us brainstorming ideas and stuff, if you feel like you want to come in and talk or hang out, the door is always open for you, man.
Yeah, I see the platform you're using to
the StreamYard. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that too. So like, you know, we can. Crossbook,
collaborate.
That's what I want to use.
I want to have you on to do a solo episode where we just talk about your life in wrestling and really dive into how you got in and some of your favorites. That's definitely on the agenda. We're gonna have you on.
Okay, so you're putting us on Dark Side of the Ring, right?
Yeah, the dark side of Chio. We're gonna make
the rise and fall, self destruction of Chio.
But thank you so much, man. We'll plug it again if you want to plug your podcast page.
Breakfast and Body Slams. It's on Facebook, so it's easy to get to. It's just the way it's spelled, Breakfast and Body Slams. And our next live event that we're supposed to be in studio is June 12th on, and you can see that on CB Pro Live on Facebook, but I'm going to tag it on to our site as well. So if you can't find that, you can just jump over to our page and watch it there.
And like I said, please share in the Terminator Tech Podcast community page as well. Anytime you go live, that page is open for you as well. We have about 800 people, and they always enjoy seeing other people's content.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Andy, you got anything?
Nah, we play on the show. So, oh, shit. As I know,
threw a bottle at me. You seen that, right?
He's flagged. He's flagged.
He's cut.
He got the body. I got the body cam on.
For my ginger ale.
I'll tell you off air, but we went to a place where it was filled with craft sodas. But
oh, man.
We couldn't travel with anything.
Yeah, you can't bring a case.
But I was like, oh, my God, I wanted to bring stuff home for you so bad, but we had no room for
this
it.
This is Big Ben's, baby. Catawissa, PA.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That'll do it for the Patreon episode. We'll see you guys next time. Here is some Billy Trey. We're out of here.